All right, we're back on Follettonians. Joining us now is David Vitti. How's it going, Dave?
I'm very good, thank you, Eric. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Glad you could make time from your busy schedule to join us.
Well, yeah, it's been a bit mad of late, and I'm sorry it's taken so long for us to finally get this sorted, because we've kind of been in loose communication for a few weeks now, but yeah, it's been a busy old time. I'm currently trying to juggle getting up at 4:30 in the morning to do the Chris Moore show on Radio 1, and then somewhere in the afternoons trying to do some ice skating training for my Dancing on Ice malarkey, yeah, as I stumble my way through that competition. So I've got a little bit of spare time now, so I thought we could have a natter.
Excellent. So how is Dancing on Ice going? How hard is that training, considering your early starts with the radio show?
Do you know, it's really difficult, actually. I mean, as much as ice skating in itself is a lot harder than I'd realized, and it's very physical as well, and so there's an awful lot of training to do, but it's made worse by the fact that, as I said, I'm getting up at 4:30, so, and then basically I'm doing my normal day job till about lunchtime, and then I have to find a couple of 3 hours in the afternoon to then go and train with my dance partner, Frankie. So what that means is I'm then coming home about 5:30, 6 in the evening. I'm absolutely shattered. I have my tea and I'm pretty much ready for my bed. So it's been hard work, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm having a real laugh doing it. I'm certainly not going to trouble any of the top skaters in the competition, but I'm having fun doing it, and I'm not taking it too seriously. So I'm just going to see how long I can stay in there for, really.
So how is the breakfast show going and?
It's all going good, thanks. It's we've just completed 7 years now of doing the Chris Moore show in the breakfast slot on Radio 1. So it's something that we never, you know, it's a goal that I don't think we ever thought we'd actually do. We've broken the record now as being the longest breakfast show, which sort of surpassed that set by Tony Blackburn before. So we're really chuffed with that. It seems weird to think that we've actually been getting up at stupid o'clock for in excess of 7 years, but it's all going good. We love what we do. We feel very lucky to do what we do, and the figures are all good. So as long as that's the case and people are enjoying it, then you know, we're keen to carry on. So
do you miss like the football bands you used to get involved in? I know in the old days, especially the afternoon show, there was a yeah, lot more football. And especially I remember one episode, and this might seem a little bit sad, but I remember when we beat Leeds at Elland Road. I think it was the game, yeah, Rooney scored, and the next, yeah, day, like, the whole show started with Zed Cars, and it was I don't think I've ever been so proud. It was absolutely brilliant.
Oh no, I remember it was Miles and myself went to that together, and so yeah, there was a bit more football banter. But do you know, the way things are going at the moment, you know, there's every chance that hopefully this will be the scenario rather than the other nightmare scenario, but you know, I think we'll be playing Leeds before too much longer, because you know, they're on the up again, and they've steadied the ship, and you know, from the disaster that they were a few years ago, I think they're going in the right direction. I think Grayson's doing a good job there, and slowly but surely they're making good progress. So fingers crossed that there might be a return to some of that banter. But yeah, you know, we still have a laugh. You know what football's like, and you can do that in, you know, on the show or in the office and stuff like that, and it's always good. You know, me and Dom take the mick out of each other as well, and so it's never far away is the banter.
So how did you come about to support Everton? How did that start?
It was a family thing. It was you know, like most Evertonians, you're born an Evertonian, really, rather than it necessarily being a choice, and certainly when you consider some of the hardship that we've all had to sit through, you know, not so much in more recent years, but certainly during the 90s and stuff like that, it's not something that was particularly chosen as a glamorous choice. But no, my dad is sadly no longer with us, but all his family were Evertonians. My dad's family originally from the Wirral, from Birkenhead originally, and then moved out a bit further out of the Wirral, sort of around Bromber and Eastham and that sort of part of the world. So Yeah, I mean, well, it should really have been tram. Well, my dad really should have brought me up as a Tranmere fan, I suppose, strictly speaking. But yeah, so I come from a line of Evertonians, and I just decided, like a lot of people, you follow your father's football team, and that's what I did. So yeah, I was kind of stuck with it, really.
So how often do you get up to Goodison?
I get up there as much as I can, which at the moment is very little. I've got a season ticket in the paddock. And my cousin Paul, who's had the same seat for about, I don't know, 13, 14 years, something like that. And you know, he's sort of best mates with the lads that sit around him. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, I was looking to get a season ticket. And I had a look to see how close I could get to my cousin Paul's seat, thinking that that way, you know, I'd go as much as I could, but if I couldn't go, then I knew that my cousin Paul's wife would go as well. So the seat would always be used, because there's nothing worse than, you know, I think people having a seat or you know, you get empty spaces when they can't make it. So at least I know the seat's always occupied, but it's mine as and when. So I managed to get one that was literally one row in front and one to the side, which is brilliant. In fact, it's even better than being directly in front, because it's easier for craning your neck around to have a natter. So I've had that seat for 3 or 4 years now, and I love it. It's a great spec, as I say, nearly at the back of the paddock, right on the halfway line. So I get there as much as I can. Ordinarily, in a normal lifestyle, you know, I probably get there, you know, certainly once a month, something like that. But at the moment, I just can't get away on the weekends, because I'm doing the Dancing and Ice shows on a Sunday, which means full rehearsals all day Sunday, and it's full rehearsals all day Saturday. So I'm struggling, and midweek games are obviously nigh on impossible when you're then getting up in London at 4:30. So it's been difficult, but I do get up there while I can, and if ever I do have a spare weekend, my in-laws are up in Wakefield in West Yorkshire, which foot down on the M62 is only just over an hour, so I always try and coordinate a trip to go and see the in-laws, which coincides with Everton being at home, and as yet my wife still hasn't figured that out and wondered why I choose this weekend over that weekend, but it's all fixture based.
Right, yeah, definitely.
So Everton actually give you a season ticket, I think, 1 year, didn't they, for your birthday?
Well, they did, yeah. This is where it came about, because I've got a contact there, Mark Rowan, and so I was actually asking Mark to, I wasn't after anything for nothing, but I said, you know, can you just have a look on your seating plan, because I just wanted to, you know, see what was free in the same block as my cousin Paul. And anyway, so in doing that, he knew that I was after one, and then the radio show was in touch with him trying to sort out something for my birthday, like a signed shirt or something, and so Mark said, well, I know Dave's after a season ticket, so how about this, how about we, you know, we found him a great spot right in front of his cousin, how about we pay it for him for 1 year, which was really, really kind. So that's what they did. They paid my season ticket for 1 year, which was incredible, and then thereafter I pay for it now, obviously, but I've kept the same spot. So no, it was really generous of him, and I really appreciated it.
Getting Everton to pay for anything must be a challenge.
I know, exactly. But yeah, for one year, I managed to get there for nothing. But it's one of those things now, because it's such a good spot, you know, and I know all the lads around there as well, and it's nice, just, you know, when you go to the game and you know everybody, and it's like a family, even if you've not been for a while. So to me, it's too valuable to ever give up. So I pay it year on year, and I get there wherever I can. And as I say, if I can't get there, then I know that always gets used for my cousin Paul. So
good stuff. Who would you class as your all-time Everton hero then?
All-time Everton hero? Reedy, probably. I think Peter Reed's never been replaced. I think we've never really found that proper midfield general right in the centre of the park that we had with Peter Reid. You know, he was great. But I mean, as well, I mean, I was quite young really still when Reedy was in his prime. So the other one as well, who I just remember really being excited about, was Beagrie. Peter Beagrie, when he was, you know, sort of flying up and down the left-hand side and doing his cartwheels and stuff, was just, I don't know, I just, he's the one that stood out for me during that sort of time, during a lot of awful stuff as well, and not the best period for Everton, but Peter Beagrie I thought was a shining light. You know, more recently, for me, Jags is a modern day hero. I love watching Jagielka play, you know, when he's on form. And, you know, I just think he's come on so much, you know, for those that weren't sure when we signed him, whether he was going to make, and it was a bit of a leap for him to, you know, to come up. And he looked a little bit short at first, but I think Jagielka's fantastic, you know, and it's going to be a job hanging on to him. But yeah, I suppose, yeah, Reedy and Beagrie are probably, you know, favourite players from yesteryear, I think.
Do you ever get a chance to meet any of the players? And even though you work in the media, do you still get starstruck by meeting the players?
Oh, absolutely. Massively. Do you know, more so than anything else, it's a really funny thing with footballers. And I've spoken to other people who, you know, work in telly and radio and whatnot, and everyone sort of says the same thing. While you don't get complacent necessarily about, you know, about meeting music people or film people, we obviously, you know, I'm very fortunate to do what I do, and I appreciate I sit in quite a privileged position where I do get to meet all sorts of famous people, and you do end up meeting a load of your heroes from music, and you know, you'd be sat there in the studio and you might be sat next to Noel Gallagher or something, which is just incredible. I still get starstruck about people like that, but certainly with footballers, they're just, I don't know, I find it really strange, because they're just, I put them in a totally separate bracket, and whenever you meet a footballer, you just think, oh my God, look, it's so-and-so, you know, and it's like, and you know, look, it's Leon Osborne, you know, and or whatever, or, you know, it's... you know, it's you get really excited about it, I think. And then even more so, I find it really weird when you find out that they listen to the show and you think, hang on, there's me. And I'm, you know, I'm idolizing these whenever I go the game. And then you think, God, and they know who I am and they know what we do. And I don't know, that really freaks me out a little bit. I suppose it shouldn't do, but it does. And I do. I get massively starstruck by footballers.
Right, so moving on to the current season, what's your take on what's going on with Everton this year?
It's not the best, is it?
No.
It's, I mean, we've got major, major problems scoring goals. It's as simple as that. It's there's major, major problems. You know, Yakubu's obviously now gone to Leicester on loan and has now found his scoring boots, irritatingly. But he just wasn't doing it for me, and worse than that, just wasn't looking interested to me. Saha, we know about his natural ability, but the problem obviously with Saha is that he's had that many injuries over the years that I always feel like he's never really prepared to push himself, and which, you know, I've got some sympathy for, but he's never really prepared to push his body for fear of getting another knock. And I always think that he plays with a slight reserve of pulling back a little bit, which is a shame, because I think in terms of his natural ability and of what we have in terms of strikers, I think he's in a totally different class. And some of the goals that he scored for us, where, you know, he scored some important goals and goals that no other player really on our squad can score. You know, I think this is a big issue, and it's like, who do we get in? Because we're relying so heavily on Cahill, and you know, that's showing now that he's not around. And but without Cahill's goals and the way that he's consistently been scoring, I think we would be, well, we'd be in a far greater mess. But who we're possibly going to get with the limited finances that we have, who's going to score regularly? I don't know. And until we sort that out, it's all going to come to nothing, because we have been playing some okay stuff, I think, through the midfield, but there's just no one to bang it in. And this is what's, you know, left us short, I think.
So big couple of games coming up, obviously Chelsea in the FA Cup on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then Arsenal on Tuesday night.
I know.
What's your thoughts and feelings on them?
Well, the thing is that I was at Chelsea away when we should have beaten them. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, while I don't get to Goodison anything like as much as I'd like to at the moment, I in addition to going there, I get to as many London games as I can. I've for many years now, there's a group of about six of us who are sort of all exiled Evertonians, and we take it in turns to get the games in and sort out tickets. So yeah, we went to Chelsea, and you know, going to Stamford Bridge is somewhere that you don't normally expect to get anything. But I remember leaving there disappointed to have only come away with a point. You know, so they are doable. I don't fancy Arsenal away at the moment, I'll be honest with you. You know, I mean, I know they're doable as well. But, yeah, a couple of big games. And I just think that just stuff isn't gelling at the moment. Arteta's not playing right. As I say, we've still got this major goal scoring situation. I think we're incredibly short. And with that in mind, I'm also surprised by the fact that, you know, Yakubu, much as I'm not a Yakubu fan, or certainly not latterly, mainly down to attitude, I'm surprised that he's been let out on loan. I'm also surprised that Vorney's been let out on loan as well. Again, I'm not sure that Vorney is necessarily top flight material long term, but I think we need whatever options we've got. And Ichibi, likewise, I haven't seen enough top quality play from him to suggest that he's anything other than cover and a squad player. So I don't really know what the answer is. We need a goal scorer. I just don't know where that's going to come from, because we just don't have the finances to bring somebody in. And I saw a rumor the other day, in fact it may have been something that you posted, which was all about there's rumors of liquidation. Is there any more on that? Or not liquidation, sorry, administration, beg your pardon. Liquidation is entirely
no,
different.
I think that was just scandalous internet rumors that we were just, you know, asking people to sort of have a little debate about. And
because there was rumors, you know, that therefore, you know, that may have been the reason why, you know, the Moyes' hand was forced a little bit in terms of getting Yakubu's wages, or certainly a substantial part of his wages, you know, off the bill. You know, we can't be in a good situation financially. And I know that, you know, you keep reading about, you know, Ken Wright going out trying to seek investment, but until the reason why, I mean, it does baffle me a little bit, the fact that Blackburn Rovers are a more attractive proposition to invest in than Everton. But I can only assume that the reason why we're not as attractive as other clubs, certainly in the Northwest, if not beyond, is to do with the ground and the fact that Goodison is well past its sell-by date, with, as far as we are aware, no realistic scope for redevelopment and no other sites within the city. And then there was only the Kirby option, which would have been horrible but would have made financial sense. And I just suspect that anybody with any money who is willing to invest in a football club, whether that be Everton or whatever, is the figures aren't stacking up because of the situation that we find ourselves in.
Right.
Which is depressing, really.
Yeah,
you've just depressed me.
Nice. And I have.
But
to
it is, though, isn't it? And you just think that if we were in a better situation, but at the end of the day, it's all to do with, you know, the figures have to stack up, and you can be as passionate a fan as you like, but the balance sheet's gotta stack up, and I think that's the big problem, because in terms of, you know, we all know that it's a massive, massive club, and it's a club that should be up there competing with the big boys year upon year in terms of support, and even additional potential support as well. It's huge, you know, and it's exactly the sort of club that really could be revitalized. But I just think that they look at the ground and it's not stacking up in terms of, you know, any number of reasons. And I just don't know how they get around this, because, you know, without a new ground, it's difficult to see them moving forward investment-wise. And with the likes of, you know, Man City and Blackburn and whoever else, and, you know, Villa, etc., you know, they go and give Houllier at Villa 18 million rising to 24 to go and sign Darren Bent. You know, we know he's a good player, but Everton can't even get close to competing in that sort of league.
Right, but we know Lerner's got money, though. But other than that, oh.
Dave, I'm going to rename you Depressing Dave.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I'm depressing myself now.
All right. Let's switch topics here. We let our listeners know that we were going to talk to you, and for some reason, the only question that came back was wanting us to ask you about the tight suits.
The tight suits, the Dancing on Ice tight suits.
Yeah.
Well, there's something of an obligation and a requirement for Dancing on Ice. I've done 3 weeks now, and I think I got off quite lightly the first week. The second week they completely stiffed me, for want of a better phrase, where I was in skin tight rainbow coloured lycra, which was a treat. And then last week I was in a suit. So I think I've got off reasonably lightly 2 out of 3 weeks, which means that they're probably going to make me look like an idiot this week. But the tight suits are good for two reasons. A, they're a good incentive not to pig out during the week because nobody looks good in lycra, and also the fact that they are so tight means that you constantly spend your whole time breathing in, to the point where I nearly gave myself a hernia the other week. So while it's good to make yourself look a bit better than you can, they're not flattering though. So yeah, the tight suits are something, unfortunately, that has to go with the skating.
Well, thanks for giving us your time, Dave. So it's Dancing on Ice Sunday, 6:30, ITV1. Is that right?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's normally 6:30. It might be. It doesn't really matter. Check the data. It was 6:10 last week, but I don't know whether that was just a one off. But yeah, ballpark 6:30, ITV1 on a Sunday, and then obviously Chris Moore's show every morning on Radio 1 from 6:30. So.
Okay.
Sorry if I've been a bit depressing and down. I've just, do you know what I do? This is what happens. You know when you try and assess where we're going, and then you think, oh, it really is all. I don't know whether you've got a slightly cheerier slant on where we are at the moment, but
really.
From where I am, it's not looking great, really, is it?
No, I have not got any kind of cheerier slant on.
I wish we did. I wish there was some sort of, you know, bright hope on the horizon.
Or but just a light at the end of the tunnel.
I just don't know where it is, and I just think that we've got to do with what we've got. But I mean, our squad, which is limited, seems to be getting even more limited at the moment. So I don't know. What do I know?
You're going to have to find a group of investors and take... You and Tony Burns can take over.
Me and Tony Byrne will get together, the ultimate consortium.
Tell Cahill to sell more records.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll create the ultimate consortium. And with that, you know, we might be able to buy one mid-range player from Crystal Palace or something. You know, if we're lucky.
That'd be a bonus.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. Maybe one more player than we've got at the minute.
All right. Well, thanks. Thank you, Steve, for your time.
It's my pleasure. Nice to talk to you, Eric. Nice to talk to you, Peter.
Right.
As I say, keep in touch, and you know, it'd be nice to do this again if I'm not too depressing.
Right. No problem at all.
All right, everybody.
Cheers, lads.
All right, thanks. Yeah.
Cheers, Dave. All right. Thanks. Bye bye.